WRIR Studios, we now bring you Defenders Live with our very own Miss Anna Edwards. Let's hear what Miss Anna has to say. Anna, take it away.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live. I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. The Defenders is brought to you as a production of the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. And you can learn more at defendersfje.org and defendersfje.blogspot.com. If you want to give us a call, it's 804-644-5834. And if you want to send us an email, it's defendersfje@hotmail.com. I am happy to be here with you once again. And today will be one of those shows where you and I just get to chat. And so what I'm going to do is talk to you about a couple of things that happened and a couple of things that are coming up. But first, I'm probably going to interject with a few sort of anecdotal things today. But one of them I wanted to ask people to just sort of think back in your readings when you were a child. And I'm certain that I am dating myself. And I am so pleased to be dating myself with this, because when I was a kid, one of my favorite authors was Virginia Hamilton. And Virginia Hamilton wrote one particular book called Zeeley in 1967. And on her website, which is virginiahamilton.com, there's a brief description that says, in this female initiation story, Geeter Perry and her brother, Towboy, go to their uncle's farm for the summer and encounter a 6.5 foot tall Watutsi queen and a mysterious night traveler. And in that book, Virginia Hamilton wove a story that is so, I just thought it was so beautifully written at the time, because I disappeared into it. I became the little girl, there became a little Anna who was a part of the story, and I was there with this little girl and her brother as they encountered this neighbor who, through the woods and in the twilight of the evening, they would see this very tall woman wearing a long, simple white dress who seemed to be herding pigs, if I recall, and taking them out in the morning and bringing them back at night. But she was so tall and she was so regal, and she was black and she was extraordinary because she was lit by the moon. And they had never seen a black woman like that. And I think that in some of it, they were missing their mother and missing their parents. But it was really the way that Virginia Hamilton just put it into the sort of the hyper real world of children's imaginations, even as they are seeing reality. And it was just one of those really beautiful and empowering stories for a girl, I think. But I would hope that any boys who read that story would have found that as well. And I would be interested to hear other people's impressions of that story, and especially if you are just one of those people who remembers reading it. So again, it was by Virginia Hamilton. It's called Zeeley, Z-E-E-L-Y. And just a beautiful, beautiful story. I was like that a lot as a kid. I was a tremendous reader, which I owe to my my parents and my grandmother in particular. Her reputation is far and wide and deep in terms of her taking every opportunity to read. And that continues to this day, even as she has most recently celebrated her 92nd birthday. She's still an avid reader. So that has played a very important role, I think, in my development. And I like to share the fact that for the better part of my childhood and into my adulthood, I did not like to read nonfiction. I was purely a literature reader. I like stories. I like characters. I like imagination, taking real issues and then extrapolating and playing them out, very much the way science fiction We'll start with a premise, a theory. It's got a wrap story around people and their lives and how they deal with circumstances. But somehow you always learn a tremendous amount about science when you're reading science fiction. And you learn a tremendous amount about history and what it means to people when you read literature. And then, of course, that helps us have a perspective and a view on the present, on what's going on around us. So I'll use that as a segue to let you know that next week we've been working on being able to sort of present in a very cogent way some very complicated issues. And as you are keenly aware when you listen to this show, the struggle to reclaim Richmond's African burial ground, the site, has been successful this year. On May 24th, there was a ceremony to do the initial groundbreaking of the asphalt. The actual removal of the asphalt took place over the next several weeks. And by the time you got through the middle of July, if you now go to the site, what you see is an enormous green lawn, or actually it's struggling to be green in the heat of summer, but it's there, and there are no longer any cars parking on that site. And no matter how sort of nitpicky you want to get in the debate about its relevance to the contemporary lives of people, we know when we sit down and we think about it that this site and the struggle to reclaim this site has been very important. And it gives us a ground upon which a tangible and an intangible metaphysical ground upon which to stand and look both back and around us and forward. And I think that becomes the most important aspect of the site. The most important aspect of the struggle, I don't believe, is achieved yet. I believe that we are still pursuing that which is most important about the struggle, and I think it's going to go on for a little while. And that is, again, the recognition and the self-empowerment that's driven by the knowledge that it was only because people, individual people, not empowered in terms of political or moneyed power, but because the people insisted, individuals, even, I include myself in that, I include the defenders in that, I include UNIA, I include the Richmond Peace Education Center, I include each man and woman that we met every time we held a program or walked through the street and handed out the newspaper, every time I get a phone call about this radio show and what it talks about, every teacher that I talk to, every student that I talk to, every single one of those encounters meant that we kind of sparked a little light in somebody's mind. And of course, that's the result of somebody having sparked my mind. I remember listening to a professor at VCU who's an anthropologist. She's a Black woman anthropologist who's retired from there many years ago now, Audrey Smedley. But it was her lecture on the creation of race, the definitions of race as we understand them today, and the beginnings of that having taken place I'm shortcutting my language, and I should never do that, and you should never do that either. We want sound bites, and we want things to be short and understandable, but we can often shortcut too much. She was talking about a particular period, kind of a tipping point event in the history of Black people and in the history of the United States here, when the idea of race, the social construct of race as we have come to understand it and live it, began to be codified in the United States. And that was with Gabriel's Rebellion. And then to understand from that and from her and from others, from her, we attended, the Juneteenth program that year in 2002, and we heard Elizabeth Camborian presenting the research that she had done in order to discover where the site most likely was of this burial ground and why that site was important. She wasn't looking for the burial ground. She was looking for the place where Gabriel was executed, where Gabriel became one of the ancestors. So she was able to lay out the research that identified where he was executed, and that meant that we now had an understanding of this burial ground, which had no recognition, which had no marker, which had no acknowledgement of the lives that were honored in their burials when they were buried there, but then were dishonored subsequently because the site became nothing. The site became speculative property that was simply passed down from generation to generation as a buffer for one family's wealth. So that reclamation became a part of understanding the context of that site, the context of Gabriel's rebellion in that time, and all of the contexts that began to evolve or come about as a result of those early stories, what each one sparks, and therefore how we share that information. And as I said, I was the recipient of Sparks. My, you know, the Defender newspaper is a result of those Sparks. Phil Willado and his writings when he was at the Richmond Free Press. The Richmond Free Press and its desire to continue to put that story forward in those years. You know, you can just look around you and talk about the people who have had either been moved by this story or have known and helped to move this story, this reclamation, forward. And one of the people that I would like to honor right now is a sister in the struggle who passed recently. She passed last week, and her name was Irene Parker, but she was better known to most of us here in Richmond and throughout her activist life as Sister Yaffe. And Sister Yaffe passed last week, and there have been so many good people who were around her and making sure that her last days were as comfortable as possible, but I think primarily so that she knew that the people who had loved her and worked with her were around her. And of the ones that I know of for sure, I would like to just gently let you know that Sister Janet Queen Nzinga Taylor of the UNIACL, Sister Daiya Rashid, who's also with the Defenders, but longtime friends of Sister Yaffe. Brother Salim Kalfani was there, I know, for a lot of that care as well, and newer people who were involved. And Brother Kwame Binta of also of UNIA and the November Coalition. And then, of course, a younger brother named Maurice Robinson, who, while he'd only known her a few months, was there to give her rides. And you may have seen them together at some of the events of early this spring while she was still strong enough. Her last and most favorite struggle was the struggle to reclaim Richmond's African burial ground. And there are some beautiful photographs of her on our website, I think, and but also there's a site, I think it's called Contradictions. It's a blog spot, K-O-N-T-R-A-D-I-C-T-I-O-N-S. There's a beautiful, beautiful photograph of Sister Yaffe speaking at the Emancipation Day program that was on April 3rd of this spring. So I hope that you will all take a moment to remember Sister Yaffe and her struggle. Her story is powerful, and we will. I'm sure that the Defender will be publishing a biography that she actually provided for us when we had talked a couple of years ago. And one of the things to remember is that this was a sister who started as a young activist back in the 60s and during the civil rights movement, and worked with Brother Malcolm X when he formed his own organization after he parted company with the Nation of Islam. And she was a true believer. She was a true believer in the Black liberation struggle and carried that forward. And all of us just need to sort of take a moment and appreciate when we find the passion, when we find our heart in the struggle, and in whatever that struggle is for you on a personal level, but also on a communal community level. And I think she was someone who lived that and carried it with her and inspired a lot of people. So it was very moving to be around her in this last year. And anyway, just like I said, take a moment to honor the memory and the life and celebrate that life. And at some point there will be a memorial for her. And so I hope that we will be able to share that with you as well. It's interesting to talk about each of these issues. And when I mentioned the Black liberation struggle, the Black liberation movement, in some ways I was too young in the years when in the 60s and the 70s to be a part of it. Certainly I was probably oblivious on the one hand. I know, though, that the folks of my parents' generation were not oblivious, and they were all involved in various ways. And I always knew that that was going to mean that someday I was going to figure out how I was going to, quote unquote, give back to the community. And it took me a while, but I'm really grateful now for the time that I have spent involved. And the fact that all of that reading that I did and all of the listening that I did and all of the opportunities to be around people who are active and engaged and thinking, serious people, have provided me with an ability to literally be here on this microphone and share with you what I can about what's happening and some different ways to think about it than the ways that are presented to you in the media traditionally, which tend to say that they want to present things objectively, but what usually ends up meaning that things come from a very limited perspective, and that's too bad. The interpretive, the subjective, those perspectives are needed as well. You need to have people giving you information within the context of a certain way of thinking, because otherwise you can't compare your way of thinking to it. And that's really what all of the debate is about, is that you get this information, you see it within the context as you understand it, and then you share that and hear other perspectives in order to get as broad an understanding as possible about what's going on. That way, your position, your opinion is not insular, and has no bearing, you know, on any other sense of understanding of what's going on. It's what creates empathy, and it's also what creates fierce determination. You could find through the course of that analysis and understanding and sharing and discussion that you feel more committed to your very particular perspective than ever before. But you will understand it in the context of the larger dynamic. And that is very, very important as we struggle to move humanity forward. So, you know, from that basis, one of the things that has evolved in Richmond and in the state of Virginia has been the Virginia People's Assembly. And that has been a mechanism by which each year all the various, as many as possible of the various struggles that are going on throughout the state of Virginia, which obviously can only be a microcosm of what's going on across the country, a very good sampling of what's happening across this country, takes place every year. In January, these struggles come together. A people's agenda is written up, and a legislation is identified that is friendly to the people or oppositional to the people's agenda interests. And we take that opportunity to make as public as possible the fact that there is this alternate agenda that may have some overlap with the General Assembly's agenda for that year, and it may not. And most of the time we find that there is not a lot of overlap. And there we get to recognize the need for that people's agenda to be brought forward and to be visible. You know, the collapse of our economy a couple of years ago and the state at which it is not recovering, the way, the pace, and the fact that jobs are not returning is a clear indication that the people's agenda is going to get fatter and fatter and fatter if the if our General Assembly's agenda does not recognize it. And it's, you know, one of the key things is jobs. That's, you know, the jobs have not come back, and yet it's jobs that are needed. The economy is not going to recover if people can't spend money, and people can't spend money if they're not earning money. And everyone else who has a job is not looking at spending money in the same way because nobody's much beyond nervous that we can see in regards to their ability to spend and maintain the lifestyle that they have become accustomed to, right? I just wanted to bring that to your attention that we are going to be looking at the next Virginia People's Assembly, and that you should be thinking about how you can tap into it, how you can bring your particular concern in the community to the agenda. Make sure that it's included so that in January, when that is presented to the General Assembly, but also just to the general public, so that people know that there is an alternative agenda out there to consider, that your struggle is a part of that as well. And we have them all, and they're related usually to very basic considerations. They're related to housing. They're related to education. It's related to healthcare. It's related to discrimination in our, in our justice system. It's related to racial profiling in terms of immigration, in terms of the connection between immigration and the criminal justice system, between education and the criminal justice. It's getting a little scary that almost everything that we talk about will somehow end up being tied to the criminal justice system. One of our friends, Brother Kwame Binta, talks about the unjust war on drugs and the resulting incarceration of so many hundreds of thousands of our black young men and women, and that we really, really, really need to be examining and dismantling and then reconstructing the way in which our criminal justice system approaches these issues and looks at incarceration as a solution to society's problems. That's not it. Incarceration is not a solution. Absolutely and immovably has been proven that it is not a solution. It is a representation that we not only don't have a solution that we are willing to enact, but also that that because it's been there so long, now people have been looking at it in terms of profit making. If we're going to have this, in imperfect a solution, how can we at least make it profitable? And therefore, we are turning the people who are in our prison system into another form of enslaved people. And as soon as we are talking about, this sort of transmogrified slavery here in the United States, it means that we are also going to have to be aware of slavery that is ongoing in Africa and in other parts of the world. We cannot act like we are the only ones. We cannot act like we own the issue because understanding it means that we understand our connection to the entire African diaspora and therefore the diaspora of slavery. And so that is why next week I really am looking forward to being able to talk about what's happening in Mauritania and the Sudan. Even as we have heard that Sudan has split into two countries and that people were hopeful that that was going to represent some kind of solution, these things are not addressing some of the underlying issues that continue to plague and have been relatively quiet in terms of our awareness of them in Africa. And so I look forward to continuing to push to broadening our understanding of the continent of Africa, its 54 nations, and the struggles of the people there, and slavery being one of the highest on the list. So, as we are winding down to the end of the show, I do want to thank you for being willing to take these commentary rides with me and to remind you that we have lots of mechanisms here in Richmond for understanding these things. And some of them are places where joyful noise gets made. And that's another way of conveying cultural information, which means social information, which means political information. The Down Home Family Reunion took place on Saturday, and that was really spectacular. It started off a really hot day, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, here we go again, sweltering at Abner Clay Park. and hoping the music was going to take your mind off it. And in fact, we got lucky and the weather broke just as it was starting to get, the sun was starting to go down. It cooled off. There was a beautiful breeze. We had musicians from Nigeria, from, you know, from Virginia, from around the country who came to perform. And by the time the sun went down, it was absolutely packed. Body to body, Abner Clay Park was packed with people enjoying the music and having really good conversations. It was cultural, but like I said, you can't avoid the political as soon as you get two people together. So it was a really, really good a good event, and we congratulate the Alegba Folklore Society once again for pulling off a spectacular down-home family reunion this year. Another heads up for you is that the UNAC, United National Anti-War Coalition, will be holding a national conference to bring the troops home and the war dollars home as well. That's in November, and we will give you more information about that as we go forward. Keep in mind, October 10th, I think this is the 9th annual commemoration of Gabriel, and we will be celebrating the reclamation of Richmond's African Burial Ground, and we invite you to join us on that day. It's a Monday. In the meantime, I want to thank you for tuning in to The Defenders Live, and I look forward to talking to you next week. And keep up that struggle. Remember your core commitment to it, and remember that kindness matters and is a good tool, and you should use it. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week. Talking so sweet when you need me.
Yeah, that was The Defenders Live of our very own Miss Anna Edwards from WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. Radio for the rest of us.